This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Harrison Ford's acting career was slow to get started, but once it took off, it really took off. He starred in several of America's top 20 grossing films, Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Empire Strikes Back, and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. He also starred in The Fugitive, Blade Runner, Witness, Patriot Games, and Clear and Present Danger. Harrison Ford's new film is a remake of the 1954 comedy Sabrina. Sabrina is the daughter of a chauffeur. They live over the garage on a large estate. She has a crush on the wealthy family's younger son, a playboy named David Larrabee, played by Greg Kinnear. Harrison Ford plays the older son, Linus Larrabee, a business tycoon who is planning a billion-dollar merger with a company whose owner happens to be the father of the woman that younger brother David is seeing. In this scene, David storms into Linus's office, accusing Linus of trying to engineer a wedding to facilitate the merger.
Something bothering you, David?
You've been pushing me into this relationship with Elizabeth so you could engineer a merger with Tyson.
Pushing you? I could burn in hell for the lies I told about you. You begged me to make you look good in front of Elizabeth.
You never said a word about planning to make an offer to Patrick.
Talk about my accomplishments, you said. My qualities. Be creative. Lie, you said.
I can't do this, Linus. I'm not ready to make this kind of commitment.
Oh, I see. She must have asked for an actual wedding date.
I don't know what came over me. She was healing children. I was in a tuxedo. I'm not in any position to take care of a wife.
Elizabeth is a doctor and a millionaire, David. She won't be a burden. You don't deserve her, but she appears to love you.
Yeah, see, doesn't that worry you a little bit? I mean, about her mental health?
Although the character Harrison Ford plays does not appear to be a likable guy, the film depends on Sabrina and the audience finding something likable within him. I asked Ford how he fleshed out the character in his mind to make him more sympathetic.
Well, I wanted to deal with the question of Linus's father, who does not appear in the film, and yet must have created circumstances that control Linus's life. Linus runs this large family corporation with his mother and says at one point that he never chose the path he follows, that he does what his father did, and his father did what his father did before him. So I tried to imagine the circumstances of growing up with such a father and in such a world, which all of the effects of which conspire to cause Linus to behave in a manner very similar to his father.
Do you find that comedy uses a different set of muscles as an actor than, say, an action film or a drama does?
I think probably that's fair to say. I suppose it's the small muscle control that makes comedy work.
Exactly.
It's very technical compared to drama, where the effect can happen when it wants to, in a way, in a dramatic scene. You can you have some choices. In comedy, it seems that you have to walk a very narrow path in order to not to upset the joke which is coming. So it is I find it more technically demanding than drama.
Can you expand on what you mean by technically demanding?
Well, I mean that this precision with which you must understand how the joke works, and aid the joke rather than get in its way, is something that's a bit more technical than drama.
Now, is it a relief for you to be in a movie where you don't have to be doing stunts and injuring limbs and all of this?
Well, I like all kinds of films. I'm glad to be able to do this kind of film as well as the running, jumping, and falling down kind of movie.
You've described yourself as playing ordinary men who do extraordinary things in extenuating circumstances in your action films.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, your action guys, they're not like the muscle guys who you know, scare off the bad guys just by looking at their biceps.
Hmm.
Your action guys are, you know, an anthropologist in Indiana Jones, a pilot in Star Wars, a CIA guy in the Tom Clancy adaptations, a doctor in The Fugitive. These are not men who were, like, born to be action heroes, but that action role is, they're placed in that action role.
Yeah.
Does that make you more, I mean, obviously, you don't have the body to be Arnold Schwarzenegger's kind of action hero.
Sweet of you to mention that. So, no, I don't, that doesn't interest me as much
right.
as it does interest me to see, mm-hmm. A character that rises to the occasion, a character with real fears and concerns. I think the thing that's missing from many action films is an emotional relationship between the character and the audience. If there is that, if that emotion is there, the kinetic effects can afford to be smaller, so as not to lose a certain human scale. The audience is willing to follow that character into the midst of the action, and they stay with the character rather than being so absorbed by the action, so that they feel the danger, they feel the triumph when the character prevails.
Now, you've done a lot of your stunts for your action films. Why do them yourself?
Well, I don't do stunts. I do those things that are reasonable for me to do. Stunts are done by stunt people.
That's a relief. I'd read you'd done them yourself, and I thought, he's
well,
crazy.
Well, it depends on what you want to call a stunt.
Uh-huh.
I mean, any place you see my face, that's me. If you don't see my face, it ain't me. But I think it's really important, even in the midst of action sequences, for the audience to be... To be able to see the character, see his eyes, see whatever emotional expression you're giving them. And so I do try and do as much of the physical action as I can.
Now, I know you got your start in the 1960s in mm-hmm. young talent programs at Columbia and Universal Studios.
Mm.
Were you being groomed for a certain type of role?
I think... if they could have figured out what kind of role I might be appropriate for, they might have tried to groom me for it. But I think they had very little use for me at all. I was hired for $150 a week, and I don't think anybody had very much hope for me. I don't to this day know why they signed me up at even that paltry sum.
How did you get in?
I was doing a play in Laguna Beach, and John Brown's Body, and a man who was doing the music for us, a fellow named Ian Bernard, sent me up to Columbia Pictures to meet somebody in the casting department. And about 6 months later, after various machinations, I was under contract, 7-year contract, starting at $150 a week.
7 years is a long time.
If I had lasted, I would have made $1,200 a week at the end of it.
So you didn't last, they got rid of you? You walked
They
out?
Got rid of me after a year and a half, but I was, I had been making it difficult for them, I think. I was not a happy puppy.
What were you doing to make their jobs difficult?
Well, I wasn't following... following the form, as far as they were concerned. I wasn't very accepting of their advice, which was to groom myself like... they wanted me to look like Elvis Presley for some reason.
Which Elvis? The Vegas Elvis?
The
Sun Years Elvis?
I suppose the Sun Years Elvis, yeah. But that's all the notion they had of me, and I resisted being forced into a mold of someone else's success.
Did you have to change your hair to have, like, an Elvis pompadour?
They sent me to the studio barber for an Elvis pompadour. No, it was a very uncomfortable time for me.
So the studio showed you the door.
They did. My contract was at their option in the first 4 6-month periods. The head of the studio had forgotten to sign my option before he left for Europe, and I was called into his second's office and told that they would they'd carry me for another couple of weeks since they knew I had a child on the way, but that they were going to recommend that I be dropped when the head of the studio came back. I allowed as how I wasn't very happy there, and I would be quite satisfied to leave right then. Thinking me ungenerous, they did let me go right away. Not ungenerous, thinking me...
ungrateful?
Ungrateful, yeah. They let me go right away.
Did they give you a reason why they weren't satisfied?
No, I think it was clear to both of us that that we weren't getting along.
Mm-hmm. So what was your next step?
Well, by the time the head of that studio came back, it was Columbia Pictures from Europe, I was under contract to Universal for $250 a week.
Was it any better?
Not much, although I enjoyed a better relationship with the people that I worked with. There still was very little work for me.
So how long did that last at Universal?
A year and a half.
And they didn't renew?
That seemed to be the limit of of patience with me at that time.
And did you think, well, that's it? Goodbye acting career?
Not at all. I launched into freelance work in television, which was all I could get at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I freelanced for about 4 years before I began my second career.
Which is as a carpenter.
That's right, yeah.
Now, from what I've read about you as a carpenter is that you basically learned on your job. You hired yourself as a freelancer.
Right.
And learned as you worked.
Well, the first job I had was a $100,000 recording studio for Sergio Mendez in his backyard in Encino. That was quite a lot of money at that time.
This is Sergio Mendez of Brazil 66.
Indeed. And he simply forgot to ask me if I had ever done it before.
Obviously, you didn't check your references either.
Right. Well, I didn't have any.
Well, this is where acting can really come in handy, I figure. I mean, did you have to bluff your way through that and be much more confident than you really were?
No, I don't know why I was confident, but I had a couple of good carpenters working for me, and I didn't lack confidence in that area.
So were you actually there with the nails, or were you directing
sure.
other people?
No. I was there with nails, a hammer, and a book from the Encino Public Library.
So what was the transition back into acting from carpentry?
Well, I did, during the period of time that I was doing carpentry, I also did three films, or two films and a television special. And during that period of time, these jobs became better. Each job was a better job than the one before. And finally, I... George Lucas cast me in Star Wars, and that was really the end of my carpentry career.
Now, which came first, Star Wars or American Graffiti?
American Graffiti was one of the three films that I did while I was carpenting.
Oh. Did that help you a lot?
Well, helped me a lot in my career.
Yeah, and getting noticed, and also maybe
I
finding a film
did.
That you felt, I don't know, more comfortable in or more...
Well, I had a very good experience working on American Graffiti. I had the first time that somebody let me work collaboratively. So I felt more comfortable with American Graffiti than I had previous to that time.
Was it the first time you'd worked with a director who was of your generation?
In fact, it was. That's very perceptive.
Did that make a difference in terms of seeing things eye to eye?
I think it did make a big difference.
Harrison Ford is my guest. He stars in the new comedy Sabrina. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Harrison Ford, he stars in the new movie Sabrina. Did you relate to the story in American Graffiti? Did you have that kind of high school life of, you know, dating and not being sure if you wanted to go to college and, you know, pranks and stuff like that?
Well, I related to my characters story.
Your character was the real outsider in the film.
Yes, he was. He was the one not even considering going to college. It was his story that I related to. As audience, I related to the film overall when I later saw it, but my job was simply to tell the story through that character.
You went to college?
I did. Yes, I went to college. I went to college for 4 years and flunked out just before graduation.
Oh, you flunked out?
How, I did.
What did... What was the last straw?
there were quite a few last straws. My senior year was a real fiasco, and I think I flunked 3 courses.
So you're getting pretty accustomed to failure, weren't you?
It's a way of life.
Yeah. Was this considered an attitude problem as opposed to a problem of intellect?
Yes. Yes, it was. And I can't argue with it. I had a very hard time relating to some notion of how this college experience might lead to some focus in life. Everyone else in my classes were going to go on to a professional career. And I couldn't imagine it. I just I didn't want to sit in the same office and do the same job for 20 years.
No, what? Did you know you wanted to act?
No. No, I didn't until my senior year. And that's...
In college?
Yeah. That's when I started doing plays.
So did you stumble into that? Were you reluctantly recruited?
Well, I took an acting class, which I thought would help get my grade point average up. And... not knowing that one was required to perform in the acting class. Actually, it was a drama class. It wasn't an acting class. And so I got up on stage and had to perform, and it made me extremely nervous. My knees were knocking. And that made me... angry, not to have control over that kind of thing. So I worked on controlling my fear at first. And then I got interested in the real business of acting, which is storytelling.
Had you ever been deep into fiction, novels?
Well, I'd read a lot, but mostly nonfiction at that point.
Mm-hmm. Were you deep into movies?
No. No, I wasn't much of a movie fan.
So it wasn't really about watching movies, it was about acting?
Yeah, it was about... finding a use for myself as much as anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me get back to Star Wars. How did you get cast in Star Wars?
George Lucas asked me to come in and help him... audition other actors for the parts of Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker. And I did for about 3 or 4 days. Read with hundreds, as I remember, of different actors. And never knowing whether I was actually auditioning myself or not. And finally, George had 2 different ensembles, 2 groups of 3 characters, and chose the group I was a part of finally.
After flunking out of college and then, you know, leaving Universal and Columbia Studios, was the success of Star Wars a real shock to you?
No, I think getting cast in it was a real shock. But as we began to see pieces of the film as we made it and the effects shots as they were being developed, I had a sense that we were in something pretty unique.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I thought it had a pretty good chance.
I'd like to ask you something that I've asked a lot of actresses on the show. You know, actresses are always complaining now that once you... reach, I don't know, say your mid-30s, it's so hard to get a leading role or even a decent role in a film. If you don't mind my mentioning your age, you're about 53 now?
53 now, yes.
And are there any similar pressures for men? I mean, you're doing good.
I don't know. I suppose the pressures are there.
It does seem it's easier for men.
Well, it's easier for men to play their age.
Right,
exactly. It's more...
And to be considered attractive and romantic at that age.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that I can accept the blame for that.
Oh, I'm not blaming the men.
No,
I mean, I'm not blaming the actor. Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah. I'm not saying you're attractive.
Good.
Yeah.
No, but I don't know why that works the way it does. I think it's a reflection of the way things are in society.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily an invention of the movie business.
So do you feel like I would imagine you'd feel that you have access to the kind of roles that you want.
I do. I'm very lucky right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Harrison Ford stars in the new movie Sabrina. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.